Hello, and welcome to another segment of Open House here at Community Media. I'm your host, Raymond Galker. This is a show that we bring fantastic, amazing individuals into our studio to share what they're doing in the community that makes the Adams-York area a great place to live. And we have our neighbors here today. Community Media, we're here at the New Oxford Borough Building, and downstairs is the New Oxford Historic Society. And we have with us Mike Shen and Bob Wilson. They are the president. Mike is the president of the Historic Society, and Bob is a secretary and a director. And we're excited about having you here in our studios. And today our focus is going to be on the Historic Society. Let you know a little bit about it. But Community Media, we're partnering with the New Oxford Historic Society to do, to bring life to the past, to bring awareness and opportunity to the present, and to bring hope and vision to the future. And these guys are doing amazing things, but you don't want to hear it from me. Mike, welcome to Open House.
Thank you very much, Ray. We've been wanting to do this for some time, and clearly being neighbors provides a wonderful opportunity for us to interact informally, and now those informal interactions are yielding some formal collaborations, and we're very excited about it. So we thank you very much for this opportunity to reach out to the audience at large, explain a little bit about the organization and what we could jointly have up our sleeves. Right, Bob?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the Historic Society has how many members?
Yeah, the New Oxford Area Historical Society actually had its origins back in 2008. And since that time, it has been focused on local history of this Eastern Adams region, areas surrounding the New Oxford community like Hunterstown, New Chester, Edge Grove, Mount Pleasant
Hampton,
Township,
Abbottstown.
And so as a result, our membership is reflective of that broad region. It's a organization that has a volunteer base in the anywhere from year to year, 60 to 100 members. They show up for events, they help us with projects, and we celebrate our accomplishments together in a variety of ways, including socials and
picnics
and things like that.
So you have meetings?
Yeah. Bob, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we have the occasional meeting, although, you know, except for an annual meeting. They're mostly events that people attend. We have regular board meetings every month. But in terms of involving the whole membership regularly, not meetings in that sense. But they will turn out for walking tours, for lectures, a whole variety of programs that are ongoing throughout the year. Plus, some of them come to participate in Market Day, Harvest Day, here in the New Oxford Center. So we have a booth there, and we're active in that, too.
So as an organization, you're active in a lot of community events that occur throughout the year that are not necessarily historic in nature, like the Harvest Festival.
Sure, or annually a carol sing right down through the town here, Christmas caroling, which is not intrinsically historical, but it's a great opportunity to get together.
Yeah. So that's a very good example of what we try to do is through our programming, which, as Bob said, are predominantly events, sponsored events, to ensure that the public at large are invited. We do not require membership to participate and attend any of our events. So in a sense, our membership are the ones that make those programs and those events possible through their donations and their dues. In addition, I think it's worth noting that over the course of the last 3-4 years, let's say 4 years since COVID, the organization established a refreshed vision of where it wants to go and what it wants to do. And so we've been operating under this a vision, this refreshed vision, that includes things that we never had the capacity to do before. One really good example of that is, as you know, we're just downstairs in the Borough Building, and we have now utilize our space here in the Borough Building is dedicated solely as a research room and archives for our historical collection. So twice a week, we have teams coming in to catalog and do work with the historical collection. And we're very excited to announce that beginning in a few weeks, we will be holding public hours twice a week so people can drop by to either donate new artifacts, new documents, from the relevant to the region and to the people that live here, but also to understand more about who we are, what we have, and perhaps even develop a little curiosity of their own in terms of their own heritage and in history.
So a great community is a community that is connected, and they're connected through their passion. So do you feel as if your members are like, their passion is history, or is their passion just a sense of community, or is it?
I think it's a little of both, but they certainly, history is a certain strength, and it's not necessarily academic history, it's often their own history. They're interested in their families, particularly in this area. They go back, some of them to the 18th century, and certainly the early 19th, and so as they want to know more about that, what we'll be able to do now is to give them advice and counsel about, well, you know, here, you go to Gettysburg to do research in the archives, or you can go here or use this source. Kind of give them direction and support. We're not here to do their research for them, but they can come in and use those facilities, and we can give them the best advice we can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would say that a principal motivator, at least that I see behind the people who are involved in the organization, is a sense of pride of the region's heritage and of their family heritage. History is a term that oftentimes doesn't connect emotionally with an individual, but rather the stories of the place and of the families that help make the place what it is today. Mm-hmm. That is what drives their own passion and their own interests. And it certainly is the focus of the programming that we do over the years that Bob and I have both been helping to lead the organization. Really focus on local history and the role of families and how places actually, and what transpired at these various places.
History, as I used to tell my students, it happens everywhere. People say, that's a historic place, I want to visit that. Well, yes, true. But wherever you are at this moment in time, it has a rich history going back thousands of years. And it can be in the most anonymous suburban development, but there at one point, and even that has its history, you start where you are. And I also would tell my students that all these things and all these people actually existed. I'm just not making this up for the purpose of a test.
Mm-hmm.
They're real, and they're your ancestors in many cases. I had students go back and go back into their family and find out what their grandfathers, great-grandfathers did, oral histories. So you start locally, and this is what makes it, we use the phrase come alive, but it really does, because it is alive, they're real.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't understand your past, it's like a collective amnesia. You have to know where you've been before you know where you're going. And we.
But doesn't that help to create a sense of identity for a person?
Yes.
And a sense of pride when they look at their heritage and how it's tied to this area. Well, how it's tied to wherever they are at that point or wherever their heritage can go back to.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it creates, there's so many different angles to how that plays out at a personal level. But certainly, I think one of them is that it helps to ground an individual to where they are today. And to the society and the place itself. Why you have a name like Abbottstown.
Mm-hmm.
Why does, is there a crossroads at Cross Keys? So curiosity, this is a means by which to help feed that curiosity about your place.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found out is that there's a lot of historical continuity right here in this Eastern Adams area. A lot of places are very migratory and people are averagely only there for the last 10 years or so. But here, it goes back. And an example would be to understand that if their family is German, that their ancestors came in the late 17th, early 18th century to Pennsylvania from the Palatinate area, very specific area in Germany. And they brought their language and their culture and their traditions with them. And it's surprising how much that still survives in their belief systems. Although they don't think about it all the time, like, well, this is why I'm saying this, or this is why I believe that. Well, there is a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they came from the Palatine, and they settled finally by the mid-18th century. They're moving out here into central Pennsylvania. So let them understand that, it's a revelation very often about who they are.
Currently, you get off work, you come home, you're not thinking about your heritage.
No.
You're thinking about
supper.
What transpired that day,
yeah.
What you're trying to get away from,
yeah.
And now what you're moving into is your family. And it depends where you are in your life, too.
Right.
Newly married, freshly having kids, just trying to survive,
Right.
Plus, it can be a struggle for a lot of people who are just starting off with a family, getting a house, having a job, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. And the question becomes, where does that sense of my heritage, where I belong, in the community, in a sense, where do you fit that in? And you go to school, you have history, but it's not totally always my history, but it is my history, but it isn't my history until I'm following my bloodlines, in a sense.
Well, so this gets to the question of what is history, and history, as Bob said, is nothing more than the sort of an expose on actual people, actual events, actual things that have happened and are currently happening today as well. And so, as an example, we find, for example, that our presence at community festivals is probably the most effective way of reaching and touching the youth through our displays and through the interactive games that we have in our at our booth, mm-hmm. that are all rooted in some form of heritage. They may be a puzzle that where the pieces of the puzzle are maps of the region before they ever knew what it looked like. They may be puzzle or games that were played by children 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. They're relatives.
That's right. So those little bits of exposure to activities that have a foundation in, from the past actually is a way to spark interest. And you never know how that's going to what it's going to yield for a young mind.
Right. I like the fact that you mentioned the Historic Society's refreshed goals is actually the center on the individual who's willing to question their heritage and come into contact with the Historic Society, and you offer opportunities for them to trace their history. Mm. And through tracing their history then, it kind of like gives them a chance then to realize what the environment was like in that time period.
Absolutely. Right.
What their relatives looked like, how they dressed, what their daily life was like, what was their concerns? It wasn't playing Game Boy, you know. What was their concerns? Right. So, you know, I like that approach that you, as a Historic Society, have grabbed as a hook and sinker.
Yeah, I think that the various programs that and events that we produce over the course of the year, and as Bob said, they will every year now for the last 4 years since COVID, we've always made sure that there's at least one outdoor tour of a location in the area to give people a sense of what that place is, who were the people that were involved.
You try to do one a year?
We do no fewer than one a year of that nature, yeah.
I think we have, since we started to partner with the Historic Society, Mark Worley.
Right.
Amazing.
Amazing Mark.
Amazing Mark, remarkable. he's been working with you all, and you do something every month as far as a lecture or, like you said, on-site. And I think we did, didn't you do one just recently at a church?
Well, so last summer, as we wanted to launch our celebration, our own celebration of the America 250th anniversary, and as Bob has alluded to, that there's a rich history, a early American, late colonial history that played out here in this region. Many people may not know it, but there are selected congregations and associated cemeteries in the region where there a large number of Revolutionary War veterans were ultimately laid to rest.
And we're looking at what year?
So those, as an example, so last year we did together a program at the Great Conowago Presbyterian Church. And we wanted to use that to introduce people to not only the church's history and its founding, how it came to be, but also to for people to walk away understanding just how, what it was like in this region before it was ever settled. Mm-hmm. How and before there were even roads, public mm-hmm. roads, but yet there was the church congregations that were being established. And then those Scotch-Irish Presbyterians go on to become some of the most committed and vocal patriots responding to the crises along the coast.
So we're looking at what time period were these churches, they were, I'm beginning to understand that churches and taverns were extremely important because they were gathering places.
Yes. Correct.
But what time period are we talking about at this time?
That we're looking at ourselves in this project, or generally speaking? You mean for the 250th celebration?
We can start there.
But we would start earlier,
right.
You know, and so as soon as there are settlers coming out into this area, German and Scotch-Irish primarily, and some English, just because can't forget the Quakers. Mm-hmm. We're talking 1740s, 50s, 60s, and then it grows from there. But sort of mid-18th century when there's enough people to actually form a congregation.
So fact, this church was established in the
1740s was when 40s. the first services were held. And then shortly thereafter, log cabin was erected.
Oh, so the services was out in the air.
Or at someone's house.
Okay.
But a congregation has formed.
Okay. Yeah.
And that congregation lives today. Mm-hmm. Right? So, yes, it was in the 1740s when this region really started to take off. It became the frontier of what we now refer to as South Central Pennsylvania. So yes, this is we had the opportunity to work together last summer, and what you're going to see are a few clips from the joint program at the Great Conowago Presbyterian Church just outside of Hunterstown.
And this is the opening, and the actual production will be shown here within the next month or so. So
right and. So. Let's let it roll.
Let's let it roll.
Hey, good evening, everyone.
Cool.
What a great production.
Yes. Was it? Isn't it? I tell you, you know, this, you know, we talked about the partnership that we have together, and community media is really excited about it because, you know, we're about celebrating a great community, which is here in Adams County and the York area. And a key is that people find their heart's passion. What excites them? And then find something going on in the community where they can find other people that have the same thing. And that's what you have done as a historic society, is you're nurturing a community that their passion is history,
right.
And they love to come together as communities, a community. And these activities that you have monthly is a key. People love getting together. People love sharing. You know, I was at this walk, if you want to call it, historic walk, and hung back and watched the people and looking at the graves and matching it to their family was important. Just there's a lot of people that, you know, love the history, and it's not just the Civil War, you know, it's right. It's the whole thing.
Yes. And absolutely.
You do another type of event, which is lectures.
Right. Well, we invite known regional as historians, as well as we produce ourselves programs that help to explain a little bit more about where we are and what has transpired. They span from across the time periods. Right now, we've been talking about 1700s, 18th century. Our programs span from then there all the way up through the middle of the 20th century, and especially when you have the advantage of images like postcards, photographs, etc. They help to tell the story. And it helps people to immerse themselves. So the challenge that we have with telling stories about pre-photographic era events is to actually help them to immerse through the kinds of images that we can collect that support the narrative, that support the what actually transpired, as well as even illustrating through actual documents, 18th century documents that exist within the archives of some of our, in Gettysburg or in York or in Lancaster. So I want to back up just a moment to hit on a point that you were making, Ray, about bringing alive the sense of community and cultivating that. One of the actions that we identified as an opportunity area that we had not, as an organization, pursued well before was the whole concept of broadening our base through partnering with other organizations. Community media is certainly an example of that, but we have been actively pursuing our agenda, our game plan, if you will, by partnering to broaden the audience and to speak to different angles or different perspectives of this thing called history, the stories that are important to those individual communities. I think that an organization like a historical society can find itself focused too solely on what is known and not willing to go beyond those bounds.
Or to become very insular, you know. The next town over, we don't care about, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
And that's, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a very good example. I think insular is the right term. So our working agenda and approach towards what we do is now very outwardly focused to other groups that we share this place with.
So you'll be interacting with the Adams County Historic Society at times.
Sure.
You'll be interacting with the Hanover Historic Society. And in fact, you know, one thing that we're going to speak on shortly is our partnership and how it has grown to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. But before we go there, I do want to give an opportunity for our audience who shares our community to see what one of the lectures looks like that you put on. And we've had one of our I don't know if I would like to call it a volunteer. It wasn't a volunteer. It was one of, let's just say, community media was at the Cross Keys village in order to film a production that you put on with someone else.
Ah, yes, with my historian friend,
was it
Bob
both of
Wilson.
You?
Yes. It was a joint program.
Yes. Okay.
Where we wanted to specifically to bring to life the actual feelings and words of people who lived during that period of the leading up to and during the revolution.
And so, yes, looking at revolutionary militia men who joined the Continental Army, where they went, where they came from, how they were recruited, how this was all shaping up here in this part of what was then York County.
So the people who were settled here, they somewhat were forced to take up arms and fight in the...
There could be moments when that happened, but basically it was a vigorous response on their own. Once they found out what was happening in Boston in 1774, after the British cracked down after the Boston Tea Party, they closed the port of Boston, they abolished courts and government in Massachusetts, and the feeling was this could happen elsewhere. That's what, there were earlier events, you've heard of the Stamp Act and so on, but the thing that really set the locals off was when they learned about how the British were clamping down in Boston. Yeah. And so they responded themselves. I mean, yes, there were recruiters at various points around, but the response was not forced. It was enthusiastic.
There was fire in there, in the blood of the frontier mentality. And the frontier life required one to be able to protect and not only protect your family, but also protect the land that you now have claimed.
And this time period is 1770s.
Yes, early 1770s,
right.
Exactly.
The frontier region of all of the colonies, including Pennsylvania, cultivated a perspective on why do I care by the residents, by the frontiersmen, that was quite different than the attitude of the East Coast cities. Mm-hmm. But it was so strong that, as Bob said, when you had these the formation of units, even before militias, men were volunteering.
Yep.
So here is the beginning to your presentation. And this is something else that's going to be on community media in the next couple months.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
So let's just take a look at the beginning.
Sure.
Of this.
Okay, well, good afternoon, everyone. And welcome to our inaugural program this afternoon on the that celebrates America 250. I'm sure many of you already know Bob Wilson, a resident of the Cross Keys Village. And for those that may not know me, my name is Mike Shen, and we will be co-producing or co-presenting this program this afternoon. The program that we've actually got scheduled for today is one that's intended to introduce to you some of the stories and the details surrounding this region's involvement during the American Revolution.
So, Mike, the Historic Society does something like this every month?
Well, yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Well, we try to do, the basis that we have set up right now is lectures and programs at Cross Keys Retirement Community, the village, quarterly. We try to have something. It might be a walking tour, but it might be a lecture in the theater at Cross Keys, which is very often, that's four times. And then additional programming when we can do it to, for example, to benefit members and people throughout the community that might not be able to easily get into Cross Keys. So there's one coming up in March, early March, on the Mason-Dixon line. We have a member who's very excellent researcher at Cross Keys, whose research digs choice, what it's called, in the Mason-Dixon line. And he's going to be doing a talk on March.
Well, we have two events for that.
Yeah.
For the membership at large, that'll be on March 1st, Sunday afternoon. And then, because we do have this partnership with Cross Keys Village, and we have been doing a quarterly programming with them, he'll be giving that same lecture at Cross Keys on the 5th, which is also open to the public at large. So, yes.
So, if you love history and you love the fact that you're living here in New Oxford, East Berlin, Hunterstown, New Chester, anywhere here in this area.
Yeah, York Springs, Hampton.
Yeah,
Hall.
Yeah. Yeah, even Gettysburg,
yes,
you know.
Indeed.
They can become part,
yes,
of the Historic Society.
So
a
we
member.
Have, right, so we, our membership allows for anyone from the, a resident of Pennsylvania and beyond even, mm-hmm, that because a number of people have, you know, offspring have moved on or whatever, and they still have a connection to the place. Go to our website. It's newoxfordareahistory.org. You can join there as well as offer a tax-deductible donation. We are a 501c3, so every dollar that comes in is tax-deductible if you handle your expenses in that fashion. And we also manage a Facebook page. You just go to New Oxford Area History, and you'll be able to pull it up.
And if anyone has archival documents that they would like to share, or even have them become part of the Historic Society, they could also get a,
yes,
hold of you in that sense.
So we have also a brochure that speaks about the organization. As I mentioned earlier, we will be holding public hours, open hours, twice a week, beginning in late February, early March. Those will be Tuesdays and Thursdays. And that's a great opportunity for people to drop in to see who we are, to, if they have items that they feel that we, that in fact we're the best curator, the best organization to protect those documents for the generations to come, for offering those donations. The other thing we're doing is we're launching a means of collecting more images of the region by individuals loaning us those photographs, so that then we can create high resolution digital copies of those, and then return those. So as long as we have digital copies that can be added to our digital library, we're happy.
That'd be great. If you have something that you don't want to leave go, but can benefit the realization of our heritage, please take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
So if that being said, I want to thank you guys for coming in, and it's we've been here for a while, but we're going to stay just a little bit longer because we want to talk about our special partnership, which is celebrating the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Rock on.
Do you want to explain what's going on? Do you want to
Sure. So we're super excited about this project that is in partnership with Community Media and a number of other organizations in the area. If we go back to spring, summer of last year, we as an organization understood that there was an opportunity at our doorstep to celebrate the local history of this region in association with America 250. So we approached your group. We formulated ideas together, and we have now come up with a project which is entitled America 250, Pennsylvania's South Central Frontier. And this region of Pennsylvania and of the frontier of the Pennsylvania colony is an area that we want to bring to life in the context of how this region participated in this moment of time that led to the formation of this country. As we've been digging into this jointly, we recognize that there's a wonderful fabric, a mosaic of that can be presented, that we have plans to present for helping people today to understand what transpired here, who are the families and the individuals that played a role, not only at the local level, but also at the colonial level.
Sure, particularly with York.
With York, with Philadelphia.
And that's what you have. Selfishly, I am thrilled to realize the history of this area. To drive down 30 and wonder, what was this like before it was Route 30? Mm. You know, and as Mike has stressed many times, it's those old Indian pathways that dictated how people moved, and this was where they were going to be settling. This was the area that they were going to be settling. And at one point, it was like the German and the Scottish, and there was no real deed. They would come in and they were settling, and then as things evolved, well, you know, you had to have a deed, and mm-hmm. and that was more so after the French Indian War, right?
Exactly.
But you know, to realize that 30 was a path. It was a footpath at one time.
Right.
Then it became a wagon path, and then and there was trees all over. So you know, how do we present that?
And this is going to be a wonderful opportunity with the skills that Community Media is going to be bringing to the table, has the capacity to accomplish, where we'll be able to take the audience in these productions and immerse them into a reality that was, in fact, the reality of the time. It's very hard for us to, as we move around in our daily lives, to envision the world as it existed in that time where we're actually standing.
So,
but we'll be doing that.
We'll be doing our best, won't we?
We'll
be doing our best, especially with the talents of Mark Worley. And I don't want to put everything on his back. But we're very comfortable with him. And also your group, Mike, you've been scouting around locations that is as close to that time period as ever that we can capture. Mm-hmm. And so this whole experience that is going on, I'd like to start off with, there's an outline of the areas that you want to cover. Of course, you're going to cover a little bit of before 1765. Mm-hmm. People coming from, this used to be part of Lancaster.
Yes,
this exactly.
Was part of Lancaster. Absolutely. So this was part of Lancaster. And then it moved to be part of York.
Right.
And then it became part of Adams County. And your timeline here, 1765, colonial life in York County's western frontier. From that point to the 1770s, 1790s, which is when Adams County.
Yeah, so what is really apparent when we were scoping out this project is that it's necessary, if you want to focus in on the events, the places, and the people that played a role from this region in the America, the Revolutionary era, you really have to understand how they were set up psychologically from their experiences after the French and Indian War, the policies that were in place that helped to cultivate or create a frontier mentality, and then how that frontier mentality actually then combines with sentiments of liberty in life.
Yes.
That took root in the port cities of places like Boston, Philadelphia, and others.
You know, even though they were out here on the frontier, some of the people that, when they were asked why they were getting into the revolution, it's interesting the language they use. They would often say, "We're doing this in defense of our English rights." They still use that adjective English. They still saw themselves as part, in many ways, of the whole English Empire. And that language quickly changed during the Revolution. It became natural rights or rights of Americans, but the notion of their liberties being infringed upon.
Yes.
And that's articulated in so many venues. One is, and you mentioned taverns, Ray, you know, that becomes an important place of getting excited about things. Mm-hmm. But also in churches, there were ministers, both German and Scots-Irish, who would deliver thundering sermons about the importance of maintaining your liberty and defense. Mm-hmm. And so those are elements too. Other churches, when you think about churches, other churches were not so engaged. The Quakers, of course, because of their pacifist principles, even they may have been sympathetic with the cause. And then the Church of England, the Anglican Church, we now call Episcopal, they often were straight out loyalists or Tories. They wanted to stay with the crown. And so you have the whole matrix of opinions. And it's expressed often through religion as well as local figures. You know, a local tanner, for example, James Smith, becomes member of the Continental Congress. James Smith is one of the most interesting figures in this whole York area. Looking at individuals, looking at their ethnicity and their occupations too. Are they farmers? Are they tanners? Are they millers? You know, that whole. What motivates them?
Right.
And this threat to their sense of what will the English do next? It looks like they're scheming to take over everything, to really tighten up the screws of the empire in a way that they've never seen before. It's almost the apprehension of what's to come rather than the reality of the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, how you think about this is the entering wedge, and if we don't stop it now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And those were the kinds of conversations that would have taken place in the taverns.
And after church.
After the meetings, and in your own home.
Intersections.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So it's that fear of, well, what is coming next? Because in fact, there was a steady cascade series of acts, designed
to reinforce that,
to raise revenue.
Yeah.
So
So they weren't absolutely, they weren't like totally paranoid.
No.
They had
there
reasons.
There was experience. There was experience.
So you look at it, you know, before 1755, they're coming from Philadelphia to Lancaster, through York, through the pathways of what is this area now, and some may go further to Chambersburg, mm-hmm. some may be going down to Hanover, but right. they're setting an area. They're cutting trees down.
They're all day long.
They're creating a farm. They're trying to create something for their family. They're fighting with some skirmishes at this time, especially when the French and Indian War started.
Oh, well, this region was the 18th century equivalent to what later became the Oregon Trail in the 19th century. In other words, very early on, the principal route from Philadelphia to the interior followed a path that takes us across the Susquehanna River at Wrightsville. Brings us into the frontier town of Yorktown, and then moves deeply into the interior to places called Berwick, which is now Abbottstown, or Marsh Creek, which then became Gettysburg. As those Scotch-Irish and as those German immigrants are making their way into Western Maryland, the Cumberland Valley, all the way down what do we now call the Shenandoah Valley, into the Appalachian Mountains of North Carolina and South Carolina. This was the superhighway.
And as that's happening then, you have the French-Indian War, and that started to slow it up.
Right. So the idea that not only was your safety threatened at that time, but also for a lot of families that were deep within the frontier regions, which is this area and
here.
West,
yeah.
They had to leave for their own safety.
Right.
There was a depopulation of this region during the French and Indian War because of the incursions.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, peace treaty is signed, the French are pushed out of...
Lost their empire in America.
Right. And what happens?
The British government decides, in order to stabilize the frontier, to have peaceful relationships with the Native Americans, we'll draw this line, the Proclamation Line of 1763, which in a broad way followed the Appalachians. And the edict was, you cannot settle these lands that you've been hungering to do mm-hmm. for so long. Can you imagine how that went over?
Now, that meant the people that were living in this area could go as far as Chambersburg?
A little, yeah.
So the trails or the public roads, I mean, the first public road through this region that was sanctioned, surveyed by the Lancaster County government, because this was all part of Lancaster County at the time, was in the 1730s. It was the Great Road from... to the Monocacy, from the Susquehanna to the Monocacy, which cuts down from to York, then after York to what present-day Spring Grove, present-day Hanover, present-day Littlestown, present-day near north of Frederick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, you ended up with the Great Road in the 1740s, to the Cumberland Valley that follows what is pretty close to being Route 30 today.
So this is what we're going to enjoy celebrating with our community.
And we're going to take the audience. This is what's really exciting. The opportunity and the funding that we've been able to receive, this would not be possible without the funding of the Hoffman Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Being made possible through that, as well as through the donors and the members of the New Oxford Area Historical Society, the donors to the community media. But we're going to be able to take the audience to these locations. We're going to be able to introduce specific families. In fact, for example, we know of that there are some very important families that took root in this region back in this era of the pre-Revolutionary War era. They fought. They had played a role during the war itself. And then when they came home, they actually were responsible for the growth of this region. They are part of that fabric that was woven by those people. And so we are very interested. We feel that this is an opportunity for us to be able to draw from the audience and from the viewers, from the people that are in this region, not only stories about their own families that they know about from this era of when the country was founded, but then also if there happens to you happen to have some treasures, an artifact, a document, something that speaks to those individuals that were a part of your life, a part of your heritage.
And you're not asking to possess that. You're asking to copy it, to be able to use it.
We simply work with the individual, with the families, understand what it is, and be able to help highlight it as part of the fabric of what we are call our home today.
So this is a very ambitious process because, you know, we're going to be having more open house, hopefully monthly meetings, to bring you up to date and share with you where this project is going. Funding is going to be very important, and we could do so much with what we got, but it seems like when we come together, our vision becomes greater and greater, because the goal that I hear is how do we immerse the person into that past experience? So, you know, there's a possibility of some reenactors.
There is, absolutely.
There's the possibility. The goal is, how can we get you to relate to that person's life at that time? So if you are interested in helping with the funding of this project, they can get a hold of us through
so we have a website that you America 250 website for this project. Mm-hmm. It can be reached at the on the webpage of the New Oxford Area Historical Society. And there, not only will we be keeping public up to date with what we're doing, but also providing resources for how you can actually go about and visit and learn more on your own. Not only the events that are happening, but then also places and people. So we think that this is the foundation for a very open-sourced way of where the readership or the membership and the audience can actually participate.
This is a great way of growing and celebrating our community. You know, we're extending an invitation to you if you'd like to become a part of this. And, you know, if you want to become part of the community, if you want to help us as we go on from your time, your talent, or your treasures, if you want to encourage the process as it goes, if you want to be aware of what's happening. I mean, you already had meetings with the Adams County Historic Society.
Yeah, I think it's really, really worth noting that we have a very good relationship for this project. not only with our friends to the west at the Adams County Historical Society, our friends to the east, the York History Center, our friends to the north, East Berlin Historical Society and the York Springs Historical Society, and our friends to the south, the Hanover Area Historical Society. Bringing all of those talents and perspectives and treasures to the table so that they can all be celebrated within the context of this production is truly an opportunity of a lifetime.
It is. It's awesome to see a community come together to celebrate and nurture community pride, community awareness. So this is going to be happening. Community media is going to be putting little shorts together constantly to go out here on Facebook to inform, to create awareness, and you know, a sense of you being part of it. So you know, we definitely want you to become part of it. And I guess when you're doing what your heart enjoys to do, when you're in the middle of your heart's passion, time goes fast, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, I think we've been on here for longer than what we realized.
Yeah.
So, Bob, would you like to say anything?
Well, I would just say this, that we're so very appreciative of the work that we're partnering with Community Media. You guys have really been such an integral and critical part, and it stimulated us. So we thank you, Ray and Mark, very much for your encouragement in this.
Yeah, and I'll echo that by saying that this would not be possible without that strong partnership between our skill sets. And when you bring, and this is a perfect example of when you're always greater and you can accomplish more when you work with others. And I think it also is worth making note that the vision is, as Ray say, that Ray mentions, shortly in the latter part of the winter, very early spring, you're going to be able to, audience is going to be able to view some of these smaller, shorter vignettes that help to ground people, but then also build awareness. And also, but the real show, if you will, the real show will be later in the year when we are packaging up all of our extended productions. And those extended productions will be made possible or made available towards the end of the year. And those will be exciting.
And again, it's important that you realize that we're extending an invitation to you to be part of this. If you have something to share, if you have a story to tell, you know, this is a chance to be a part of a community, you know. So if there's nothing else, I mean, there's so much that we could talk about. And
we'll save it for the next time.
We're going to save it for the next
time.
Right. Because when you get people together that share the same passion, the vision just keeps on growing. So until we have a chance, sit down and share our heritage again. Be healthy, be kind, and you know you are precious. Thanks for watching us. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.